I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, February 7th, 2018. I'm Dave Anthony. Will we get to read the Democratic rebuttal to the famous Republican memo?
We think this will help inform the public of the many distortions and inaccuracies in the majority memo.
I'm Lisa Brady. One not-so-small step for American business, aiming to take a giant leap into the final frontier.
Isn't it great to see everyone so excited about this?
And I'm Juan Williams. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
President Trump feels vindicated by that Republican memo, telling a crowd near Cincinnati, Ohio, Monday.
Did we catch them in the act or what? You know what I'm talking about. Oh, did we catch them in the act? They are very embarrassed.
It alleges the FBI abused government surveillance power using an anti-Trump dossier funded by Democrats to spy on an ex-Trump campaign aide in October 2016. Republican chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, told Fox on Monday,
"We had to use this process in order to make it public because DOJ and FBI were refusing to investigate themselves, refusing to acknowledge that there were serious problems."
Democrats have their own memo, a 10-page rebuttal the committee's also approved for release, now being reviewed by the White House. Adam Schiff's the top Democrat on the committee.
"I think it's going to be very hard for the White House, like it was hard for the Republicans on our committee, to block release of this."
Schiff worries, though, portions might be redacted for political reasons. Democrat Eric Swalwell is also on the committee and says what they wrote is important balance to the GOP memo.
"The memo really distorted the state of the evidence and what was obtained through the FISA process."
"Does it change any of the fundamental facts we think we learned?"
James Freeman is assistant editor of the Wall Street Journal editorial page and a Fox News contributor.
"Let's assume the Republican memo is correct, that the FISA judge was not told that Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party paid for the opposition research, that the judge was not fully apprised of how it was totally unverified."
But do we really know about this totally unverified? Because, again, the Fusion GPS people in their testimony to committees was that, in fact, the FBI told them there were things in this dossier compiled by Steele, the ex-British intelligence guy, that the FBI had corroborated some of the things. Now, we don't know what that is, do we?
Well, I think we know that the information that's in there about things that were already public, you could say, okay, that was true. The question is what was new in there, the you might call them salacious allegations.
Right.
They have not been verified, and we do know there was definitely something wrong in there about it was an allegation that Mr. Trump's lawyer had traveled to Eastern Europe, and it was incorrect. So I think it's fair to say that according to the FBI, if the memo was correct, the process of trying to figure out if this was true had only begun.
Gotcha.
And we know from later testimony that it has not been concluded with a finding that it was true.
Right.
They're still trying to verify it.
Now, Democrats have said that this memo omits information, so therefore it is a false and misleading document, and that it doesn't actually prove anything. I mean, you've read all the commentary on the left about this, that this isn't actually a dud. It proves nothing.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what they have to show for that. But I spoke last week with a former government official with a great deal of experience preparing materials for the FISA court. And his read was that the judge would probably be pretty angry if the facts as laid out in that memo were correct.
Including the fact that a newspaper article that was actually sourced by Steele, who wrote the dossier, was used as part of the reason to get the surveillance, correct?
And the underlying facts were not corroborated really at all, because you have two levels. You have the first question of, should the judge have been told that the Democrats paid for this memo?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then beneath that, the question of, even if you believe Steele, if you have a good feeling about him, he is essentially reporting second and third hand data from unnamed Russians.
Right. So he was in contact with Russians, which is also kind of ironic because the whole investigation is about the Trump campaign's contact with Russians.
And you would want to know, okay, which Russians? And why do we think this is true? And where exactly did this information come from? The idea that the government could spy on the opposition party with an evidentiary standard below the level of most professional newsrooms in the media business, I think is not what most Americans have come to believe about this court.
The Republican memo came out on Friday.
When I actually saw it, it was even worse than I could have possibly imagined.
Carter Page is the ex-Trump campaign aide subjected to the controversial FBI surveillance and says over time he knew he was a political liability.
Anyone who had any connection or had ever done any work, positive or otherwise, in Russia was constantly sort of the number one target for attack.
Page told Fox's Laura Ingraham Monday night he did go to Moscow in July 2016 and did give a speech, but not representing the Trump campaign.
I was an informal, unpaid advisor, and I've been grilled literally many hours on this in both chambers of Congress many times. And, you know, I gave him a heads up, and they said, you know, it's fine to go, but you're have nothing to do with the Trump campaign.
Now, Page admits he did work with Kremlin staff as an energy advisor for a short time, but disputes an allegation in the dossier that he met a Russian oil magnate, Igor Sechin.
I've never met him in my entire life.
Now, the dossier alleges Sechin offered Page a 19% stake in a state-owned oil company in exchange for sanctions being lifted if Donald Trump was elected president.
The memo from the Republicans said this, that the Russia investigation, the national security investigation, actually began not with Carter Page, but with Papadopoulos.
Mm-hmm. George Papadopoulos, who has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI, someone else who had contacts with the Russians, and who boasted that apparently, this was a big New York Times story not long ago, boasted about how the Russians had told him, right, that they had dirt on Hillary Clinton, and that he knew that before all of the Clinton campaign emails started becoming public and WikiLeaks and all that.
Right. So personally, I don't think it matters whether that began the investigation on the question of should rumors paid for by an opposition political research effort be used to obtain a warrant. I don't think, to me, it doesn't matter whether it was at the beginning, the middle, or the end. If that is used to get a warrant, you have a problem. And even on the Papadopoulos stuff, it's not illegal to talk to Russians. It's not illegal to hear that somebody has dirt on Hillary Clinton. I mean, there would be a lot of people who have dirt on Hillary Clinton all around the world, I would think.
Democrats have said the effort here, really, by the Republican memo, is to undermine this Russia investigation and circle the wagons around President Trump.
You maybe could take that seriously if the same people had not been warning about the FISA court. Adam Schiff, who is ubiquitous on TV coverage in the press, ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, spent years saying the FBI is abusing its authority. The FISA court has got to be reined in. He introduced a bill to say we need to see decisions from the FISA court made public so that we understand what judgments they're making on civil liberties. All of a sudden, he seems to think it's illegitimate to question this process that he's been questioning for years because it resulted in targeting his opponents. And I don't know how to take that seriously.
Well, the memo might give a clearer picture, as they claim.
Yes.
Very good. James Freeman, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be here.
This is Juan Williams with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
It was a breathtaking moment from the same launch pad where NASA sent men to the moon.
3, 2, 1.
The successful test launch of what's billed as the world's most powerful space vehicle, the SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket,
5 million pounds of thrust. That's like 18 747s. SpaceX employees cheering from the company's California headquarters and mission control.
If you can hear me over the cheering, Falcon Heavy heading to space on our test flight.
The unmanned Falcon debut did have one passenger, a Tesla Roadster with a mannequin in a spacesuit from SpaceX and Tesla chief Elon Musk.
Really excited about today. Incredibly proud of the SpaceX team.
A dash cam sending live video from space.
It just has the same seats that like a normal car has. It's just literally a normal car in space, which I kind of like the absurdity of that.
And there was another breathtaking and important moment when not one, but two rocket boosters landed safely, upright and side by side, back at Cape Canaveral.
Often it doesn't get that kind of press.
Evan Brown covers the space program for Fox News Radio.
It's debated in much of the media whether or not we still had a space program. There was a lot of consternation over the idea of paying Russia money to be able to put our astronauts on their Soyuz spacecrafts going to and from the International Space Station. But all of that was giving NASA some rebuilding time. First of all, to put together its real plans for its next generation taxpayer-funded space vehicle of exploration, whereas also allowing the U.S. private aerospace industry to develop its technology, often using NASA information and even former NASA minds, to come up with ways to provide space travel and transit at a cheaper cost to the American taxpayer. And we're seeing that really come to fruition. We've seen the launches from SpaceX and from other companies, most notably Blue Origin and also another company called Orbital ATK, which have been providing launch services for the United States in many capacities in support of the space station. And coming up, we will be seeing SpaceX and Boeing begin to transport American astronauts on contract for NASA. That's, in fact, the first launches for SpaceX on a crewed mission, as well as Boeing, I believe, are supposed to happen later this year. It's been a delay. It was supposed to happen a couple of years ago. But delays do happen when you're developing new things. And so this is the year, and even Elon Musk, the chairman of SpaceX and the billionaire inventor and businessman behind a lot of this, has even said during press call yesterday that later this year, SpaceX is going to fly its first manned mission with American astronauts, taking them from Earth and to the space station and back down again.
Where does the Falcon Heavy, this world's most powerful rocket, fit into the SpaceX plans?
Well, SpaceX will do more than just work on contract for NASA. It also does private commercial launching for companies around the world so they can get satellites into space. The Falcon Heavy has the ability to bring up very large payloads, which can be helpful to its commercial clients as well as NASA. You know, we are so used to the image of the space shuttle, which had its large payload bay behind the cockpit where we could put whatever we needed back there. It's almost like a big trunk space and fly it up and let it go. That's how most of the International Space Station was built. We don't have that anymore. But a rocket ship like the Falcon Heavy, and there are others that use the same concept, but they have the ability to put those big things up into space. And that's something amazing to see happen, you know, being provided by a private sector entity, because the private sector, as we, I think, are well, we well know this, they can do things at a fraction of the cost that government can. And that leads to a cost saving for taxpayer, because NASA will use them on contract. It ends up being very good for American industry and global industries that need access to space.
And part of Elon Musk's big vision to get costs way down compared to what they have traditionally been is to reuse the rocket boosters, right? And that's actually working.
It's working. It's been working fantastically. And that, yes, is a a hallmark, really, of SpaceX, the ability for them, or this technology that they've come up with, where they can land the booster rockets and land them, not that they just fall down and they go recover them, but land them on a specific target, in this case back at the launch pad, or in some cases on a barge at sea, recover them and reuse them. That is an amazing cost savings. That's something that we had not done with the space shuttle or any other space vehicle NASA had operated. Other spacefaring nations, specifically Russia, had not been able to do that, really. And so this brings the cost down when you don't have to manufacture the entire spacecraft all over again. And I think everyone should be quite proud that it was American ingenuity. These are the former NASA brilliant minds that went to work for the private industry, in this case SpaceX, but also Blue Origin also does this as well. That's the Jeff Bezos company, the Amazon mastermind. And both companies have figured out ways independently to do this, and they compete with each other, or they will compete with each other. And that's capitalism. That's good old-fashioned American ingenuity. And I think a lot of people are watching this being proud of the spectacle of the Falcon Heavy, but also proud of the concept behind it.
Under President Obama, NASA's mission had shifted, aiming for a Mars mission and trying to send astronauts to an asteroid. President Trump signed a directive in December telling NASA to refocus on human exploration and discovery to send astronauts back to the moon.
This time, we will not only plant our flag and leave our footprint, we will establish a foundation for an eventual mission to Mars and perhaps someday to many worlds beyond.
The new policy also ends the asteroid mission. All of this under unanimous recommendation by the newly reformed National Space Council, with Vice President Mike Pence at the helm. So, Eben, what's the ballpark timeline for the manned mission back to the moon?
Well, it will be many years off if, in fact, that is ultimately decided upon. We do not have the space launch system built yet. We have had a precursor to it tested and whatnot, but the vehicle is not yet finalized. It could be another decade. If the decision is really made to make a run for Mars, it could be even longer. There are talks of sometime in the 2030s, which I guess really isn't all that far away if you start counting it. But for the meantime, we're seeing American private industry do what NASA once did. And I often am asked to explain this as in a historical measure. And if you can go back in your high school history textbooks and remember that after explorers like Christopher Columbus and others from Europe were able to get to the New World and figure out a way to get back and forth with relative safety and to do it on a regular basis, those taxpayer-funded vessels of exploration from Europe stopped making the run. They turned it over to private companies that were able to do the transportation more cheaply and still allow the governments of Europe, and in this case the kingdoms, to have their ability to get back and forth to their colonies in the New World. This isn't much different in that regard. It's almost in many ways a waste to have American taxpayers spending too much on space transportation to do what is essentially a regular route to and from the International Space Station. We want our NASA people, our explorers, to go see what else is out there, and let's come up with jobs for people getting out of college with those high tech degrees that we push all of our students into pursuing, having jobs in the American space industry where they're, even if they're not themselves the astronauts, they are an important part of the process in getting the astronauts to and from space.
Eben Brown, thank you so much for your insight.
You're welcome.
Download Perino and Steierwald. I'll tell you what.
Is it a lot of pressure to cook you dinner?
No, because I ate hot dogs for breakfast on a moving train and loved it.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Juan Williams.
What's on your mind?
Is there any way to help President Trump climb down from his pledge to build a, quote, great, beautiful wall on the Mexican border? 2 weeks ago, Trump remained high up on the pledge during his State of the Union speech. The fabled promise to build a wall, now blocking the president from making an immigration deal with Democrats, there are two big questions at play. One, how much money do Democrats have to give the president in the name of border security to help him climb down? And two, will right-wing talk radio allow the president to make an immigration deal if he shifts to just talking about a virtual wall? The first to offer the president a helping hand off the ledge was White House Chief of Staff John Kelly. Kelly reportedly told members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus not to worry about the wall because, quote, a 50-foot wall from seas to shining sea isn't what we're going to build. The next day, Kelly explained to Brett Baer, my Fox News colleague, that he was simply pointing out to the Hispanic Caucus that all politicians, quote, say things during the course of a campaign that may or may not be fully informed. Well, President Trump didn't take that help, fearing that he might look weak to the anti-immigration crowd. He tweeted, quote, the wall is the wall. It has never changed or evolved from the day I conceived of it, end quote. Then another offer of help to get the president off the wall came from the Department of Homeland Security. They reported last month that 2017 saw the lowest level of border crossings in American history. Well, that fits with efforts by federal officials to give a statistical helping hand to the president. They offered him numbers showing that during President Obama's second term, the net migration from Mexico fell to zero. That means more people were exiting the U.S. to go south than entering the U.S. from the south. The president's fellow Republicans in the Senate are also offering a helping hand if he wants to get down. With the growing influence of Hispanic voters in the southwestern states, such as Nevada, Arizona, Republicans are hesitant to embrace the label as the party of the wall. The only big, beautiful wall being constructed these days is the barrier between reality and the mindset of anti-immigrant Trump supporters. Who among them will help the president avoid a crashing fall? I'm Juan Williams.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.